All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
Welcome back. Taxation is theft. I know it's been a while. We've been pretty busy with the last couple weeks of the presidential race and everything else. And of course, I actually have with me one of my wonderful opponents from that race, Judge Jim Gray. How's it going?
Dan, it's going just fine. Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
Awesome. So, it was. How do you feel after the last couple weeks? Was it crazy for you?
Well, yes, it was crazy. We libertarians made history. This is the first time, in my understanding, there's ever been a virtual political convention. And I thought that Nick Sarwark and the team carried it off pretty well. Can't say I agreed with all the decisions made by him or others, but then again, I don't always agree with my own decisions, I suppose. But I thought that was fine. As far as the campaign was concerned, I was proud of what we did. I think we got our message out, and I didn't come in first. As I say in justification, the delegates had a perfect right to make a decision and to make a mistake. They did, but so it be. They had every right to do it.
Well, you got further than I did, so congratulations on that. It was pretty awesome to have you as a part of this race. We've met a few times before in the past, and I've always had a lot of respect for you. And of course, you have a very similar position on taxation, right?
Well, I do.
We've talked a lot about like the national debt and those sorts of things and how that's related.
Dan, I was the chair of something called the World Affairs Council of Orange County for a while, where we would have speakers come in about international issues. And we had a really solid ambassador who gave us his talk and talked about all over the nation. And then the first question was, what is the biggest security threat, Mr. Ambassador, to the United States of America today? And without batting an eye, he said, it's the deficit. And only we are talking about it. And then you heard me with my regard to my grandson, I assume, which I'll say again, because I'm proud of it, that April 21st, I became a granddaddy for the first time. And I was holding my little grandson, Hudson, for the first time, maybe 5 days later, looked down at him and what a spectacular miracle child. And then the second thought I had was, okay, Hudson, you're $76,000 in debt, pay up. And it's an abomination. That is the legacy we are leaving to our children and grandchildren. And only libertarians are talking about this issue, and shame on the rest of them.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's something I like to talk a lot about too, because the tax I probably hate the most is the income tax. And that's the one that's always so closely related to the national debt. There are, even within the Libertarian Party, there's a lot of people, I'm of the opinion, you know, we can write off a lot of that debt, but there are a lot of people who say, no, we have to pay off that debt. And I'm just like, that's impossible to collect that much money to pay that off. That much money just literally doesn't even exist. So it's a really difficult problem to look at. But then at the same time, for some reason, when the normies look at it, you know, they're like, oh yeah, $24 trillion. Well, that's the government. They've got plenty of money. That's, you know, they know how to handle these problems. They're doing okay. What do you say to those people?
A long time ago, the Keynes economics, I saw a cartoon when they were all going in circles and just having a wonderful time saying, we owe it to ourselves. We owe it to ourselves, as if we don't have to pay it back. Oh, if we owe it to ourselves, and we, well, okay, but it is the full faith and credit of the United States government. Say what you will about that. But, you know, we do owe other countries money. We owe people money, the bonds and the rest of that. I'm a libertarian. I believe in contracts. I believe in enforcing them. So I think we do owe it. And of course, you have the Fed and the federal government just cranking this, just printing money. And it's a disaster waiting to happen. It's happening already. But it's deeply serious from my standpoint. Just ask my grandson, Hudson.
Yeah, absolutely. So the debt, it's... I'm trying to think, where should I go with this? Because there's so many different facets to the debt. And to the income tax. I mean, most people don't even know what the income tax is spent on.
That's true. Well, I had a proposal and it didn't fly. I will recommend it to Dr. Jorgensen and her team, but I think an audit of the federal government will pay dividends, that it will show everybody, instead of saying, I'm going to abolish the IRS, which nobody has the ability to do right away because it has to be done through Congress. There is no vehicle for abandoning or abolishing any agency now. Tragic that that is. But if you start addressing their budget, then Congress can start shrinking it. So we start looking at this and looking at that, presenting alternatives, which I tried to do, and I expect we'll talk about it. I can't get away from it, nor do I want to. But that you can just show the people why the federal government should not be so large. Just show them that there are some agencies, some projects still that had their roots in the New Deal. You know, you can agree or disagree whether we needed them back in the 30s, but my goodness sakes, now in 2020, oh no, I don't, you know, but we need to educate and then show people that. And we need to provide to Congress people the background, because if their voters understand that, they'll be leading the charge. And that's the way we should go. Because as you know, big government, Dan, is really, really good and efficient and effective at doing one thing, and that's increasing the size, the power, and the cost of big government. Just look at them. Look what they have done. It's only we libertarians that point that right, shine that light on it. It should be done publicly. Because once people understand, they'll agree with us, from my standpoint, that the privileged class today really is government workers in a lot of ways. I'll tell you a story. My wife and I were in Tahiti a while ago, and we were taking a trip, just a tour. I had a driver and just took us around the island. And all of a sudden we saw this enclave just up ahead, and it was on a cliff overlooking the water, and it's beautiful. And he said, oh, that's where the government workers live. That's where the wealthy people are. Of course, they were from France, but that's the direction we're going in. Really, it's accurate in Tahiti. It's becoming pretty accurate here too. Do you want to get really, maybe you haven't heard me say this, do you want to really get depressed? Do you want our viewers, listeners to get really depressed? Go sure. Google the words, the Plum Book, the plum like the fruit. And it's a federal publication. It is 212 pages.
I've heard of this.
Single-spaced of positions that the president can appoint, half of whom have to be confirmed by the Senate. And you look off in the right column, and almost every one is paid something in the order between $168,000 and $198,000 a year. And you wonder why government's so expensive. It's just out of control.
Yeah, it's... So here's the thing, though, because I've noticed this, like the Pentagon had an audit. I think the first one ever was a couple years ago, and they $23 trillion missing, which just so happens to be what our national debt is. But it didn't make the news. The people who I talked to and told about it were just like so uninterested by it. Like, do you think that this type of audit would actually create enough interest for change, or do you think people would just be so apathetic that they would say, well, it's not my problem to deal with?
Well, it depends. If in fact Gray Sharp or Jorgensen Cohen win the presidential race, there'll be so much attention that people will listen, at least at the beginning, to anything that she says. And if she says we're going to conduct an audit, we believe this is what it's going to show, yes, it will be effective. It will be effective because it's your money. You know, and we will then, we can talk about my view. We called it from a crutch to a ladder, but it's not UBI, by the way, but it is Milton Friedman, whose book is right behind me here, Free to Choose. But it is something that would reduce the intrusion of the federal government and reduce the intrusion of the IRS by multiple. And it's a step toward the right thing. And so we can show them, in effect, if you do this, I would connect it to a graduated flat tax, so that if they in fact raise our taxes, you can see it. I mean, it's just obvious that you should see it. My boss is back. Hi, Gracie. So at any rate, you can see it. And if they, for some reason, she's flirting with you, if you reduce taxes, you can see that too. So it's transparent. So people will care. They will care if their taxes are being increased or decreased.
Right. And I think that's a big thing that I was trying to push with my campaign, was to stop focusing on what's going on that's, you know, the Fed and the taxes and all this stuff, and to start focusing on what's the what's the actual, like, where does this actually contact the voter? Like, is it their paycheck? Is it the fact that they're renting? Like, hey, let's get you to stop renting and put you in a house. Let's get your mortgage payments down. Let's get, you know, these types of things where they can actually say, like, yeah, that sounds great. What do we have to do? And you know, create that interest. And then, of course, my boss is telling me to keep it down a little bit. Then you create that interest. Okay, yeah, somebody actually wants to help us. How do we make that happen? And that's when you can start connecting the dots for them. It's really to kind of get them hooked with that interest.
Dan, this is not cynical. This is accurate. I believe that everybody that goes into the voting booth, or now votes by mail because voting booths are becoming passe, has one question on his or her mind, and that's, what's in it for me?
Yep.
Every last one. And it depends. You know, it could be filling my rice bowl. It can be getting my children educated. It could be world peace, for all that matters, or liberty. But we all think that. So if they understand that this will have an effect on them, that's the same thing in the same way. If you stand up and say, I will repeal Obamacare, which, by the way, I would, but a third of the voters, 40% of the voters are going to think, you don't care about me. You don't care about my health. That's a sure loser. So, in fact, yes, we would repeal it. But first you say, I would replace it with, and I would have a system of vouchers or something. Yes, paid on a sliding scale. Then, of course, you could use it in the free enterprise system. Competition would come back, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But people all vote that way. I vote for liberty, but most people vote elsewhere. They have to see how, in fact, this will help me. And we have not done that very effectively, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is difficult. And that's always like the biggest objection about libertarians. And what's interesting about that is, for us, it's easier to say things like, yeah, let's get rid of the IRS. Let's get rid of the drug war, because a lot of us have come here because, and it's not everybody's story, but because we've been wronged in some way by the government. That's the quickest way to create a libertarian. So it's almost like, you know, yeah, you know what, if we increase taxes, if we grow the size of the IRS, we'll start creating libertarians left and right, much faster. But yeah, so it is as much as libertarians try to argue that the libertarian philosophy is not selfish, there is still an aspect to it. And I guess I'm not a huge Ayn Rand fan, but I guess she was kind of that persuasion too, that yes, even though we want freedom, it's a sort of selfishness, but that doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. The word selfish is usually has a negative connotation to it, but it's not necessarily, even if, you know, as long as the things you're trying to implement are not harming other people, and in this case, they're actually helping other people. So I think that's a...
We have made a huge mistake, Dan, from my standpoint, back for decades. We have allowed other people, we libertarians have allowed other people to brand us. And so we're deemed to be kooks. Of course, having a striptease at our national convention on national TV didn't help much. And, you know, we are Ayn Rand. I mean, she was right. Greed is good. The way she sells her novels, and she explained it, that if you're acting in your own economic self-interest, okay, that can be greedy, she defined it. That's a good thing, because everybody does, and then the whole free enterprise system works. So that's a good thing, but we are deemed to be greedy. We're deemed to be survival of the fittest. We're deemed to be uncaring, you know, and it's just not true. So I've been trying it within my own ability to mainstream the word libertarian. So yes, in the book I recently wrote, it was 2 paragraphs per liberty, solutions that are practical, effective, responsible, libertarian. Or I have a competing podcast with you too, sir. It's called All Rise, the Libertarian Way with Judge Jim Gray. It's on every Friday morning and on the Voice America Network. But put in that word libertarian just to mainstream it, just to make it acceptable. Because, I tell people, yes, you have libertarian values that are the same as ours, responsibility of all things, you know, equal opportunity, that sort of thing. But we have tarred and feathered ourselves, allowing others to call us greedy or survival of the fittest and the rest. And it's still pervasive now.
Right. So you brought this up a little bit earlier. Of course, I brought it up before the show started. I called it a UBI. You call it a negative income tax. What's the difference?
Sure. UBI is a silly idea. I mean, it's similar in some ways. It would give X amount of dollars to everybody in the country. You, me, Bill Gates, you know, all the rest of that stuff. Okay, so then that makes it fair, right? Well, okay, but Bill Gates, he's going, if that happens, you're going to give Bill Gates, what, $500 a month, and charge him an extra $100,000 a month for his taxes. So I mean, what kind of fairness is that? And the bureaucracy and everything else. The negative income tax, in effect, under Milton Friedman, let me just explain it to you for a minute. Give me a minute and a half and I can go through it. It's connected to a graduated flat tax. So no one in our country, for example, and the numbers are used for illustration, no one in our country would pay any income taxes on the first $30,000 of income, capital gains, interest, whatever, it's just all there. For every dollar you make between $30,000 and $100,000, you will pay 8 cents to the government. I don't care how you spend your money. By the way, that gets the intrusiveness of the IRS out of it a large deal, because then you don't have to show them where you're spending your money and protect it and the rest. So I think that would be devoutly to be wished, as Shakespeare would say. For every dollar that you make between $100,000 and $500,000, you'll pay 12 cents of those dollars to the government, and you earn more than $500,000 a year. Welcome, Mr. Gates. You'll pay 18 cents of those monies to the government. Again, don't care how you spend your money. Now, what if you make no money? Here's where the negative income tax comes in. I don't use the word negative because it's just, I don't like that word. So I use a stipend instead. What if you earn no money at all? And I don't care if you just lost your job to a robot, or you're going back to school to better yourself, or you're just plain lazy, as long as you're a citizen, you're here with a green card, you're over 18 years of age, we will give you $15,000 a year. Stipend of probably 12 monthly payments of $1,250. But importantly, which is totally missing in today's welfare, for every dollar you earn, you will lose 50 cents of your stipend. So you always have an incentive to earn the extra dollar. That means if you do your math quickly, say if you earn no money, you get $15,000 a year. If you earn $10,000, then you end up with $20,000, right? Because you lose $5,000 of your stipend, but you make the extra $10,000. So you always have an incentive to do better. So the cutoff point then is $30,000. You get no stipend, you pay no taxes, wherever that might be. Okay, what about the homeless? And I will tell you, Dan, and I expect you agree with me, if I were bleeding on the street right here, you would have no legal obligation to help me whatsoever unless you caused my injuries. That would be different, but we will because we want to. You know, I was in the Peace Corps. I care about people. I believe we're a compassionate people. So if the homeless were to have, for example, $1,250 in the equivalent of their ATM account every month, quickly the private sector would start coming up with some form of inexpensive room and board facility, that sort of thing. Probably charge them $1,150. They'd have another $100 a month to take care of buying their toothpaste or whatever. And then the private sector, again, would start addressing this problem. Because today, I mean, it bothers me to see homeless. I'm sorry, it just bothers me. It's not who we are. Particularly women, you can call that sexist if you want, but it bothers me even more to see a woman homeless than a man. But at least this would be an institutional response, because we all see, oh, government sometimes gets political pressure, or they have some heat on them or whatever. So they throw $10 million at something, which will last for maybe 6 months, and then they go off, sail off and do other good deeds, but there's no institutional response. The situation goes back to where it was before. This would be both an institutional response as well as being able to bring the private sector into it, just like I mentioned with you for vouchers for within the healthcare system. You know, you allow the private sector, the private free enterprise system, to do what it does best, which is respond to needs. So that is basically what my system would be. Yes, the IRS would still be with us, but in a much reduced fashion. I'm a modestly intelligent person, Dan. A month ago, I signed my own income tax return. I had almost no idea what I was signing. It was so complicated, so thick, it wasn't worth it to me to do. It cost me $1,100 to have it returned. That could be saved. We wouldn't need to do that anymore. It'd be a postcard that you just send in. I made this much money, I paid that much, and it's done. It's just simplified. It makes it better. No, it makes it much better. And that would be what I proposed. The delegates didn't go along with me.
So, okay. So I want to bring up some issues with this and we can have a conversation about it. I will say on its face, it sounds great. Like a lot of other government programs, right? It's out there to solve a problem. But I want to poke a few holes in it. So first of all, it's a huge new program that would be implemented nationwide, and we don't know, just as government, whenever it comes up with any other plan, we don't know what the side effects are going to be. We don't know how it's going.
Can I interrupt you and say one more thing that I forgot to say? This would pretty much replace all other welfare systems, except for people that really had special needs. So the food stamps would be gone, and the aid with dependent children,
right.
You know, all of this stuff would be gone.
And so that's actually a good point for what I was getting at, because all of those systems are abused to some degree.
You betcha.
And
expensive and intrusive.
Right. And so by switching to a new system, we don't know if that's going to be abused more or less. So there's a degree of uncertainty there where, you know, it could turn out that, so here's an example. In Florida, they wanted to drug test recipients of welfare, and they ended up spending a ton of money. It didn't do anything, and it was just a total waste. So what if this turned out to be that, and then there would be no stepping back because all the other programs are gone?
Fair enough. And that's legitimate. First of all, nothing ventured, nothing gained. I mean, all that sort of trite stuff, but, you have to use, as we say in the legal department, in the legal profession, sometimes you have to jump and hope there's water in the pool. You know, I can't try it out without doing these things. Conceptually, I like it. Conceptually, my tax returns would be much easier to prepare. H&R Block does not like this proposal. I can live with that. But, you know, you'd be able to have it transparent. I really, it's hard for me to figure out even how much taxes I'm paying with regard to my SEP account and, you know, all this other stuff. Here I can see it, and it's simplified, and I can return, do it myself. I can see what I'm paying. I can have that incentive to earn the extra dollar. Let me tell you a story that my daughter has approved me telling, because it's not tattling on her, that she is bipolar. She's 44 years old. She's having trouble holding a job and that sort of thing. So she was volunteering for a really wonderful group called Veterans Legal Institute. They provide legal assistance to veterans. And so I went behind her back to the director and said, look, if you give my daughter a job and you pay her $12 an hour, I will pay you $15 an hour. Just don't tell her, so she has the benefit of thinking she's, you know, holding on to the job. We found out quickly that if she were to work, Dan, more than 10 hours a week, she would lose more in her benefits than she would gain by working. So she has an incentive not to work. And we have seen with now all of this COVID-19 stuff where people are getting unemployment insurance payments and they're being paid more for not working than they would be for working. They have no incentive to go back to work. Here, at least, thank you, Milton Friedman, the incentives are all where they should be. Today, if you have an unwed mother with a child then, and all of the incentives not to have the father live with you, because if they do, she loses so much in welfare benefits.
Right.
By the way, he loses them also. So we're forcing people away from each other. All of that would be different in my proposal.
So there was, and I can appreciate those aspects of it, but at the same time, are you creating more problems while at the same time introducing a couple solutions? So for example, I think it was New Hampshire, Vermont, I can never get it right. They created this program for their, I think it was for their unemployment program, where if you were able-bodied and you were receiving unemployment benefits, they would ask you to do some sort of community service. And they found out that 80% of the people just left the program. But it created that incentive. So why not take those same incentives and apply that to the same welfare programs or the same tax programs that we have now?
Fair enough. Logical question. My view is I don't want the government overseeing whether you're working hard enough, whether you're really doing exactly what you could be. Here we have an innate incentive. If you just want to stay where you are and live at a barely poverty level, okay, do it. I can't make you change. It has to come from within. When I was in the Peace Corps training, I learned that people will only change their attitude and their actions if they have what we called a felt need. That is, it had to come from within. Now, maybe the impetus came otherwise. You have that, oh, yeah, experience. Here, if they want to better themselves and they see we're working will better themselves, they will. Logically, I can't make them do it. You know, I can't. You put in more bureaucracy and it isn't going to help. Some people will take advantage of it. Yes, will some people work in the black market and not give in their money? Sure, but it's happening today. Nothing is perfect. Life is complicated. This will make it, from my standpoint, better. And I have Milton Friedman to stand on his shoulders. That's pretty good standing.
I like not to give too much credit to any particular person, because, you know, even some of the best people are, you know, they have their own personal flaws, or they have their own, you know, that one position you don't agree with. So,
oh no, Dan, that's not true. I don't have any flaws at all. We all know that. Well, maybe just a couple. I will not let you talk to my wife, okay?
Okay, so now I lost my train of thought where I was going with that. So
you only have, you're saying you don't trust, you know, you put all your eggs in one philosopher or one person.
Right. I mean, like, you know, anything, like, you know, if Ron Paul came up with a plan tomorrow and, you know, I have, you know, he's like the guy who got me into the liberty movement. Like if he came up with something tomorrow that I was like, eh, I don't really like that. I'd come to that decision on my own, regardless of, you know, even if it came from him, it's kind of like, that doesn't mean anything. He might've lost his marbles at some point or whatever. So that's kind of a good position to have on everything, to keep us thinking for ourselves. And, you know, even though someone carries a lot of credibility, that might get us interested in something, but we should still, reserve that thought for ourselves.
Let me tell you one of my triumphs, as I call it, of parenting. I was driving my three children, they were maybe 6, 6, and 3 years old, down south, going by a strawberry field. And the strawberry field had plastic over it, and I'm still not particularly sure why, but they poke a hole and they plant the strawberry bush, or plant, and it comes up, maybe just to keep the humidity or something in the soil. And I said, look, kids, this is where they raise plastic. Oh, really, Daddy? Oh, really? And then I didn't say anything. And maybe 5 miles down the road, one of my sons said, oh, come on, Dad. The triumph is when you're 6 years old, Daddy knows everything, right? I mean,
right.
By the time you're 16, I don't know anything. But at that point, but I helped them to challenge, even from their daddy,
challenge authority.
The information. And yeah. That's what every voter should do, just like you're saying. Just because it comes from Ronald Reagan or Ron Paul or, you know, Adolf Hitler, you know, challenge it, be creative, and regardless of the source. People don't do that enough, particularly in today's world where we're so tribal. You know, if the Democrats say something, then, oh, yes, all the Democrats fly without listening. Milton Friedman, again, a revolution. If the only people would understand this, we should judge our programs by their success, not their good intentions. If they would just do that, minimum wage issue would go away. By the way, the minimum wage would go away even on my negative income tax, or what I call from a crutch to a ladder. There'd be no need for a minimum wage. That's a good thing. You know, all the other bureaucracy and stuff, just let people make their own decisions.
So
it's all there.
I want to ask this because it sounds like you're okay. So I have this program called the New American Dream, where basically it looks at some of these problems and it says, okay, look, these are good problems to solve, right? We don't want homelessness. We don't want people sick. We don't want people working 40 hours a week just to end up in debt. You know, we don't want these things. These are problems we do want to solve. The minimum wage I see as a Band-Aid. Welfare programs I see as a Band-Aid instead of fixing the actual source of the problem. So can I ask first, are these the problems you're trying to solve? Homelessness, poverty, starvation?
Yes.
Okay.
But let me tell you something in the law, first of all. It goes over into politics. For most human problems, and I use this in my mediations with people trying to address their issues. In most human problems, there's no solution. And you use that word several times. Somebody goes through a red light, runs into your car, breaks your arm. The solution would be not to have had your arm broken, not to have the pain, not to have the discomfort. And the rest. I can't do that. So am I trying to solve homelessness? There's no solution. There will always be homeless. I'm trying to resolve it. I'm trying to make it better. I'm sorry if somebody went through the intersection. All I can do is pick you up, dust you off, right. Make some compensation, probably with money, aim you off in the direction to let you get on with your life. That's what I'm trying to do here. So it's important that people realize there's always going to be problems. There's always going to be poor. People are always going to starve. Someone will always run through an intersection and run into your car. I'm just trying to make it appreciably better.
So that's great, because I think those are really the same problems I'm trying to solve or improve with my plan. So let me ask it maybe this way. So we have an individual, and an individual is, let's say if they were out in the woods and they were to build their own home, and let's say it took them a year to build it, and now it's built. They have a shelter. Maybe they can build it in a week if they're, you know, one of these woodsy kind of type of people, right? That's there. It's done. It's built. And they might have to patch a leaky roof every once in a while, but for the most part, that's going to be there for the rest of their lives. They're going to spend maybe a few hours a day foraging for food, hunting, whatever they're going to do to feed themselves. And that's it, just a couple hours a day. For some reason, and of course, we all want to have a better lifestyle than that, right? We want to have, you know, nice houses and TV and internet and all this other stuff, which would cost us more than a couple hours per day to produce. But if we want to move to today's society where we have a single farmer who in his 40 hours a week can raise enough food to feed 100,000 people, why is it that we have people working 40 hours and somehow they're working themselves further into debt? They have a roof over their head, but if they don't continue working, that roof is going to be taken away from them. If we look at the problem like this, then we can say, okay, look, what if we solve some of these problems by we stop kicking people out of their homes because they can't pay the property tax after they've retired, after they've paid off their home? We make it easier for people to buy their own homes so they can stop throwing away all their money on rent. We make it so that when they work, they get to keep everything that they earn, which I'm sure, you know, a lot of libertarians are in favor of that because that's just getting rid of the income tax. So if you were to improve things this way, and this is where it really gets interesting because you talked about the minimum wage. Like, why is the wage so low? And if you think about it, it's if you have 1 million people in one factory and they're all going to that factory, please let me work. I'll take whatever. Well, the minimum wage, you know, it's $10. Oh, I'll take 25 cents because I really need this job so that I can pay the king's property tax. That's why the wages get so low. But if you take that away and say, well, you know what? I don't need a full-time job. I've already got a roof over my head. Maybe I grow a little bit of food in my home, or I do my arts and I sell my art. And because the cost of living is so low, I don't need a full-time job. We're no longer begging. It's the factories. It's the employers who are now begging. And so they're not paying. Their minimum wage is $15 or $20 or $30 an hour because nobody wants to work for them for anything less. So would it be more advantageous to look at it that way and say, what if we fix the problem this way instead of continuing the system where, and as much as I admire having, you know, those incentives to get people out of that system, instead of creating more of a system that continues to steal or theft taxes, take from one person from what they're earning to give to another person who's not producing as much. Why don't we shift our thinking into this other system to say, let's just get to the root of the actual problem and make this not make it to a point where people don't even have to work so hard?
Okay. First of all, Milton Friedman and I believe in a safety net, a level below which people should not be allowed to fall. And I put it at $15, I put it whatever it is. So far, what you're saying is wonderful. You're straying into socialism in some ways, which, and I'm not sure, I didn't hear how you're going to accomplish that. You're going to tear down the income tax. You're going to let somebody live off in the forest. It's not easy to, and you, it's really hard in New York City to live in a forest. But, you know, so I didn't hear, Dan, and I'm anxious to hear. I'd love to have a better approach. That's pretty much within me. I see problems, and I have, throughout my history, I've been able to put in programs to assist addressing the real fundamental issue. I do not understand. I know where you're going and I love it. So why shouldn't I have a living wage? If I'm going to work 40 hours a week, why shouldn't I be able to get more money? And by the way, let me quickly tell you as well, I went to UCLA, I majored in US history, and my project, my term paper for that was the 1932 general strike in San Francisco, where we had the longshoremen, and they were truly being taken advantage of. You know, they'd come out literally in the morning where jobs were scarce. And they say, well, okay, I'll pay you. You'll agree to do it for 75 cents an hour. Oh, you'll only do it for 50. Okay. And they bid them down, really taking advantage of people. And they carry all this burden onto the ship. Then they'd have to run back. They were truly taken advantage of. And the general strike was supposed to address it. So there's bad stuff going on in the world. I understand that. What is the plan, because I'm listening, what is the plan that would be able to accomplish what you're saying? Okay, everybody can keep all the money they earn. Sometimes, Dan, and it's harsh to say, some people are not at the moment worth $10 an hour, much less 15. Right. You go to McDonald's And you'll see that if you make the minimum wage $15, some people are not worth that much. So now when you order your Big Mac, you order it from a computer where it used to order it from a person, because the cost was just to put those people out of business. And I say you can't get up the economic ladder unless you can get on the first rung. You've got to be able to get that first job, then learn to be reliable and the rest, and get along with your fellow employees, so you will make more money. But okay, I haven't heard the plan.
So I think this plan is, instead of bringing people up that ladder, it's lowering the ladder. It's okay. So let's say you have somebody who's not worth $15 an hour. They're still paying property tax, right? Just to live. So
either through their rent or their direct payments. Yes. Right. One way or the other. Yes.
So if you eliminate that, you're reducing their cost of living.
Sure.
So if, sure. I mean, you have basically, this is your cost of living, and this is your income. As long as your income is above your cost of living, you're going to be making it through. Now, if most of your cost of living is taxes, and it's not most, but it's a lot, then let's say somebody's cost of living is here and their income is here at maybe $8 an hour. If you can lower their cost of living here, $8 an hour is now a living wage.
Right. Good. That's wonderful. By the way, you know, with regard to your property taxes, I don't know where you are, but in California, we pay through our property taxes, we pay for trash pickup. So if you eliminate that, then I'm going to have to pay for trash pickup. There are some services, not many, some services that governments do give. They're too big, they're complex. You know, we've gone through all of that. But there are, you know, you pay for your police force. Well, okay, if I don't do that, then I'm going to have to hire a private police force. And you can say that's a good thing or not. Fire, you know, there are services that you get. So it's not exactly free. They're going to have other problems. I agree taxes are too high. I'll say it every time you want me to say it. I would reduce the size of government, the cost. I've already talked about that. But there are some services that are provided. So when you're out in the forest and your wife wants to give birth, you know, you're going to have to find a way for a doctor. And it's pretty dangerous for the woman to give birth without medical assistance. I mean, so there are some benefits. So,
but consider this, because schools are a big one that's paid for with property tax. If you don't have any kids, or if you have kids but you want to homeschool, should you not be able to just completely opt out of that system and say, I don't want the socialized school system?
The answer to that is yes. Only I would instead, again, Milton Friedman, school choice, where the parents would be empowered, which is exactly the word I mean to use, empowered to say where their government money was going to be spent for the education of their children. That could include charter schools, homeschooling, military schools, whatever. The answer to that is yes, but money would still be there.
So let's dig a little bit deeper. If I were to say, I don't want to pay a fire department to come put out my house. I don't want to pay in advance. If my house does catch on fire, I would rather have them come out and I'll pay them then. Should I not?
That won't work.
Why not?
That's been proven not to work. That in some places in our country, in the age old, you would hire, in fact, they would put a little medallion right by the curb. So you are paying Gray Fire Company to come and put out your house fire. But if you didn't buy it in advance, you're not going to be able to negotiate with them while your house is on fire. They'll sit, and there have been times they've come and watched. I say, oh, you don't have a medallion. Too bad, Charlie. But will you? No, you didn't pay. Because if I wait for the fires to come, I'll go out of business because not enough people will pay me. So you have to be on their list of people that are their customers.
Okay, but so let's look at this in two ways. Who is that not working for if you didn't want to pay for it and you didn't get it? That's
I know. So your house burns down.
Right. That's the consequences you have to live with. But at the same time, you also have people who insure their homes. Most people insure their homes. And if you insure your home, don't they give you a discount if you install fire detectors, smoke detectors, and all these other things?
Sure.
So wouldn't they also give you, and they actually give you a discount if you hire a private police department or private security company, all these other things would be discounts. So
I agree. I think the private sector there would work pretty well. The same thing with regard to licensing attorneys. I wouldn't do that. I don't think the government should be involved in that. However, I think that if you're going to act as an attorney, you should have insurance. Okay, the bonding company, the insurance company, will kind of make sure I know what I'm doing, because they're otherwise, you know, they're going to be too much at risk. yes, I would bring the private sector into lots of these things if I could, but those are individuals. What I do not want, and I'm a private judge now, and when I'm working, I get some good money on it, but I do not want the judiciary to be private, because then only the wealthy can afford justice. And if you, like one of our fellow candidates was saying, oh, you know, we'll make it voluntary contributions of people. No, because if you have private people, private foundations paying for the judiciary, they will buy justice, a lot more justice than you or I will. So there's some things I believe that government has to spend money on. I think the military, I think that sort of thing, and the judiciary as well, even the FBI.
Let's talk about, I mean, we're kind of going off on a tangent, but you did bring up an interesting point about courts, because yes, you're right. If you have a private corporation who has the ultimate judicial authority, it's probably going to be corruptible. However, it's
you cynic. You really think that would happen?
But it's not. Yes. When you talk about courts now, courts, they still charge filing fees and court fees and everything else. If you want to, like, so they do raise money already, and it's they do have waivers. If you say you're indigent, you can still file your cases, but for the most part they do. And then when there's a huge settlement, I mean, let's say a $50 million McDonald's settlement, the lawyers get a piece of that, a big piece of that. Do the courts take a piece of that? And why wouldn't that be an incentive to say, okay, well, fund the court with,
you don't want that to happen. So then the courts are going to tag the companies that have the most money. So the courts can. That was part of civil asset forfeiture. You remember policing for profit? If the police officer saying, oh, all right, Dan, I see that you have this. I'm going to take your gold jewelry. It's worth $5,000. The first line of defense would be you could go to the district attorney saying, this just isn't right. But please tell the police to give me that back. Do you know, at least in where I lived in Orange County, California, that the DA would get 10% of the forfeiture stuff? So they have an added incentive not to find in your favor. That would be the same thing with the court system. You do not want the court system to profit by ordering that you pay money. That's called a bad incentive.
That's a fair point. But
neutral.
So we diverged from all these taxes. But the point is that if we have the right to choose, like let's look at the school example, or if let's look at my example where I say I don't want to pay for the public fire department. Let's say even I, you know, if I don't, I want to let my house burn down, or I want to pay a private company. Should I have the right to make that decision? Is I think the most important.
In my world, yes, you should.
So
when I'm king, we will institute that.
And if you let's say you have a low income, you might say, well, you know, my house, the things that I have in it, they're not worth insuring that much. They're not worth, so I'm going to forego that because I'd rather spend the money on something else. Isn't that a right that that people should be able to have to choose?
In my opinion, yes.
So what I'm getting at is that all of these taxes, and I want to throw this number out because I love throwing this number out. The American payroll was $8.5 trillion in 2018, I think 2019. $8.5 trillion. That's how much everybody received on their paycheck before taxes. The governments, the federal, state, and local governments collected from us $7.5 trillion, which is 88%. And what makes this whole thing even worse is that there's only $3.5 trillion of printed money in circulation. So my thing is that the people who are struggling the most, if they didn't have to pay vehicle registration fees every year just to keep their cars, if they didn't have to pay gas tax to get to work, in California it's over like $1 a gallon, isn't it, with all the federal and state combined?
Yes.
So now you're making it more expensive for them to get to work or to drive their kids to school or all these other things. If you didn't have all of these taxes, life would become much more affordable. And I get it, the gas tax is supposed to pay for the roads. And you know, there's all kinds of arguments to be made about that. But how many of those people that are just going back and forth to work every day are using the big interstate highways or the big, you know, are they paying for the roads that they're using, or are they paying for the roads that are, you know, maintained by their... Yeah, by their HR. So it's we're creating a system where, especially people with lower income, they're being taken advantage of the most because they're paying all these hidden taxes, and it's not in relation to their income, because if they didn't have a job at all and they were just living off of their savings, then you know, they'd still be paying all of these taxes.
And you're right, completely right on that. You know, if they had more money in their pocket, then they could enjoy their lives more. You haven't told me how you're going to put up a system that allows this to happen.
You just get rid of those taxes.
Well, okay, all right. So you get rid of taxes, but then so you are condemning poor people, the students, the children of poor people, not to have an education. How are they going to get their children educated?
I wouldn't say so, because if you look at somebody who's got kids and they're paying rent and they're paying property tax. If you eliminate that property tax, I mean, what does it cost to put a kid through school in California? Like 30 grand per student, I think, per year, something like that. To homeschool them only costs $100 a year with some programs.
Okay, but a lot of parents can't do that. They don't want to do that. They're not capable of doing that. They need to go out and work instead of doing that. So sure, but you have to be wealthy. You have to be wealthy to homeschool your child.
I think Arvin would disagree with you, but this goes back to the original problem, right? We're untangling a big ball of knots, because yes, if you pull this, yes, people aren't going to have time to work with their kids at home. But consider that, you know what, 50 years ago, we didn't have both parents in every family out working 40 hours a week. And because of the increase in taxes, we have to go out, we have to work harder, we have to earn more money.
No,
taxes, cost of living.
We do have increased taxes. I mean, it's absurd when you think about not only income tax and property tax and sales tax and gift tax and, you know, all this other stuff. It's amazing how they do it. I'm not arguing. You understand my credentials.
Right.
I'm not arguing with that. They should be reduced. Government's too big. We've already talked about that. But you're still, at least with my system, we're deciding arbitrarily, maybe, safety net will not allow you to fall below that. Not because we have to, but because we want to. But you're saying, you know, if you're out there and you're earning, you're paralyzed. You have disabilities. You're not able at this moment to earn very much money. I am still educating your children. The government is still taking money from someone else and educating your children. The government is allowing you to go to an emergency room and get, it's expensive. Somebody has to pay for that. So ain't it awful? I understand. And basically, I don't mean to disparage it, but that's what you're saying. Oh, it ain't it awful because they have to pay all of these monies. It'd be better if they could keep their money. I agree, obviously.
Well, no,
better
for all of them.
But there's
going
to be a hole in that too.
What I'm saying is that it would be better if the money that they earned was not taken from them.
Fully agree.
When you go to the hospital,
you and I are in accord. I want to reduce the expense of government, reduce the taxes, and I in the last campaign gave ways for that to be done, you know, with my sunset provisions and the rest. You and I are in accord. I want to reduce the cost of government so that the taxes go down. Of course, we have the deficit to pay and stuff too. Life isn't fair. I raise my children with that. The wealthy will always have more than the poor. Sorry to be so blunt. You know, and socialism doesn't work. You've got to have incentives. So that means that the people that are the Bill Gates in this world who had an idea and were able to profit. Elon Musk, say what you will about his politics, but, you know, he has some interesting ideas and he profits from them. Does he profit more than the gardener that mows your lawn? Yes, he provides a better service. So yes, he should profit by that. So life isn't fair. At least Milton Friedman and I are going to put in some place where you're not because you're entitled, just because you're alive does not mean I owe you anything, in my opinion. You're not entitled, but maybe you'd be appreciative. So we're going to put at least that level below which you will not be able to fall. Your children will get a good education because you will be empowered to decide they want to go to a vocational school, they want to go to a military school, they want to go wherever. You as a parent decides. All of this is within what I'm talking about. I was in the Peace Corps. I care about people. I want them to be able to thrive. The best way that can happen is to have them have an incentive to improve themselves, which is lacking in almost anything I'm thinking of today.
So
By the way, may I throw one more thing at you?
Yeah.
I'm not quibbling, but life is complicated. Sometimes taxation is not theft. Meaning, if they don't get the money, it's not theft. It might be attempted theft, but it is coercion. It is extortion. If they get your money, it's theft. I see that. If they don't get your money, now it's extortion. If you know, if you don't pay your taxes, they threaten to put you in jail. Okay. If they still don't get your taxes, it's still extortion, but it's not theft. Sorry.
Fair enough.
You know, but life is complicated. That's my point.
That actually gets to my next question is okay. Well, I mean, it's the question of how do you pay for this? And of course it's with theft. So are you justifying theft with this system, even though yes, you're going to be stealing less potentially. But let's go back to that figure of $7.5 trillion that the government collects.
Outrageous.
Are they going to say, like, if the one thing that we change, and I get it, we're not just going to change one thing, we're going to change a few things. If the one thing that we change is what the tax is on and who is going to pay the tax and maybe the different rate, is Congress really going to sit there and say, oh, well, we were collecting $7.5 trillion before, not just Congress, but all levels of government. We were collecting $7.5 trillion before. Now with this new program, we're only going to collect seven. Or are they going to say, well, we don't know how this is going to work out. Let's make sure we're collecting eight just in case, just to make sure if it comes in a little bit under, because that's how those greedy bastards are. Do you think that this would, so first of all, how do you justify the fact that it's still money being taken from other people? And is this just Pandora's box to open it up to increasing more taxes?
Sure. And the answer to your second question is potentially yes. If it doesn't work, I suppose. You have to jump and hope there's water in the pool eventually. I think with good minds that we can set up something transparently that would be much less bureaucratic, much less intrusive, much less expensive, and the rest. So that should mean that taxes go down. The problem that I'm having is that we have a government. Article 1, Section 8 does set forth, and in my view, except for the U.S. mails, pretty much it does set forth some things that we need. We have decided that we need to have a military. Okay, I'm not going to be able to get voluntary contributions, I believe, in order to have a steady source of income so that we can have our fighter planes protecting us and the fighter pilots. They're expensive. I'm not going to be able to get enough to fund the judiciary. So I hope you agree we do need a government. And some things in government must be paid for. If you have a government, they're going to have to be paid somehow. I'd like to reduce the numbers of congressmen, but that's different. But one way or the other, if you're going to have a judiciary, I think you need a national police force, the FBI, et cetera, is there. I'd do away with the DEA, but that's different. So, you know, there are going to be some things that we need. So we have to pay for them. That means the government has to get some money. Now, you could do it by putting an embargo on all trade goods coming in, because that's what we used to do in the 1800s. I like free trade. I think it helps, it benefits us as well as benefits others. It benefits the taxpayer. The consumer, you get less expensive, higher quality goods by free trade. So I'm not going to get money for the government by putting tariffs on. I don't like that idea. So how are you going to get money for the government? And we had some of our candidates saying, oh, well, people would voluntarily donate to the government. I don't see that happening, at least not on a regular source. So, Dan, I'm asking you, how are you going to get money to the government unless there's some form of taxes?
Well, I think, you know, like we said before, we identified that courts do charge for their services. The post office charges for its services. Any registration office, so whether it's the county clerk or the USPTO or any of these organizations, they charge for that. When the country was first started, the politicians, the congressmen and the presidents, they weren't getting paid salaries. If anything, they were getting, you know, per diems. There's a huge amount of cost. The military you talked about is like that huge. I'm sure you agree.
Dan,
we can cut that down.
I'm sorry, but you're begging the question. I agree with all of those things. Money is much too expensive, but there is going to be some need for money coming into the government. I hope you agree.
Sure.
At least the military and the rest. Where is it going to come from?
I just listed a few, and to the point, I know you say people say voluntary donations, which I don't agree with, but I think voluntary interaction. So to say, I agree with this service, I want to contribute money to it. What about war bonds? when they would sell war bonds to raise money for.
You have to pay them back. We already covered that. So the money has to come from somewhere to pay them back.
Right. And so like when they sell bonds to build a rail system, they charge money for the, for access to the rail system, whatever that is.
I do not want the government owning the rail system.
That's fine, and you can have competition with it. But my point is, whatever the project is, they can sell bonds, and if people are interested in that, they can figure out how to raise money for it. There's this thing that we like to say where, is it something that you would pay for? Is it something that you want? Would you pay to have it if you didn't have it? And if the answer is no, maybe we don't need it.
Don't need it. I agree. I believe that users, the roads should be paid by the users. You know, I would privatize the roads if I could. I mean, I don't have a magic wand, but I think that would be a good idea. You put some transponder on your car, I suppose, the city streets and the rest of that. Yeah, I'm into user pays and the rest, but there's still going to be some people that are down and out that can't afford to get justice. I mean, if you're going to charge, the courts is going to charge people to come in for justice, you know, it's not going to work. Only the wealthy will get justice. I don't like that idea. So, well, yes, sometimes somebody ran into your car, you can get an attorney to represent you on a contingency. So the attorney will share in the recovery, assuming there is one. But I'm just trying to get you to a base, just so we have a base of agreement. Yes, the government's much too expensive. Yes, the taxes are critically much too high. But I'm trying to get you to agree that government does need some money that will not, for example, the military, even the court system, even the FBI, is going to need to have some money. So if you agree to that, which I think is fairly obvious, too much, et cetera, then I'm going to ask you where that money comes from, and it's not going to come from user fees. You're not going to be able to have the FBI paid for by voluntary payments or by seizing monies, which you don't want to have happen. Have them have a vested interest.
So,
let's
talk about the FBI.
For money.
A lot of people think that the FBI shouldn't exist, but I say that there are some valuable resources that they have, like combining information about people traveling between states that they're trying to track down.
That's right.
If a police agency, I mean, police agencies, they pay for their guns, they pay for their radar machines, they pay for their cars, they pay for a lot of other things. If an agency wants access to that information, why wouldn't they pay? Why wouldn't they pay to whatever the FBI becomes? That is basically a central system for collecting information. There's
Bernie Madoff is in prison, rightfully so. He was a fraud. He was a cheat. He cheated a lot of people out of a lot of money. It could not be done by local police. It really needed a national police because it was just so wide in scope. It's expensive. And yes, you can, but you do not want the FBI to have a vested interest in prosecuting people that have money so that they can pay for themselves. That's not a good system. That is not where incentives should be. FBI is expensive. The courts are expensive. Military is expensive. Again, I ask you, and you're a thoughtful guy, and I've enjoyed having this conversation with you, but there is a threshold of money that the government's going to need to use to be able to exist. I think
sure,
it should
but
be. I've tried to mention some. Tell me where that money's going to come from, because the answer is it's going to come from taxation.
Well, okay, hold on. I've listed a few things that, and I know you've shot some of them down as bad ideas, which is fine. But I've mentioned a few things, and I keep hearing from you that the only way is through taxes. Which first I want to say that the mentality of that is we have to have an open mind that taxation is theft and it's wrong to steal. So maybe I don't have all the answers, but let's work to figure that out. But I think the most dangerous thing about taxation to pay for any of these is that if the government sets the rate, they determine how we're going to pay, and we have absolutely no say in that. We have no, you know, you go to a restaurant and the food's bad and you say, hey, this is gross, I'm never coming back here again, and I'm not going to pay. You can't do that with the government. So they're going to increase the rate and take however much they want, which means they're going to take more. Like, you know how it works. They're like, oh, well, we collected $1 billion this month. How do we spend that? And as they collect more money, they figure out more things to spend it on. So like you were talking about incentives, how do you remove those incentives?
You and I are in complete accord with all of that you have said.
So how do you remove those incentives? That's what I'm trying to do. Remove the incentive that they have to spend money that they can just go steal.
You shine a light on it, like I said before, because it is the taxpayers. Once the taxpayers see how they're being extorted, how they're being overspending, the rest of that, then we will have to go over the heads of Congress to the taxpayers, to the voters, and surround them. Show them why this has been so much more expensive than it should be. Come back to my little baby grandson too. You know, there's a cost. There is a cost, and so far Hudson is $76,000 in the hole. You've got to show this to people. You've got to make that felt need so they feel that they're being cheated, which they are. They are, and I'll say it all the time that you want me to. But there is some government that we do need, and I don't know of any other way that works, putting the incentives where they should be, to have some form of taxation. When you put in the 16th Amendment for income tax, they were going to put in a maximum of 3% on the income tax. And everybody laughed at him, said, oh, come on, it'll never get up to 3%. We don't need to put that in. You know, it's just government has a way of continuing to get bigger, bigger, more expensive, more intrusive. We both agree with that. I want to cut it back. You want to cut it back. I have vulnerabilities in what I'm saying. So do you. That's called life.
All right. Fair enough. Well, this was an awesome conversation. I know I said I wouldn't hold you more than an hour for this, but thank you so much for coming on the show. I did want to get to the other issue, but maybe we'll do that another time on another show.
Okay.
Thank you again so much. And if there's anything else you want to say, if you want to plug your website, talk about your podcast a little bit more.
You know, sure. I do have. I've written probably more about issues than any presidential candidate in history. It's all on judgejimgray.com. I've been writing a blog for 5 years. I sent out issue number 263 today. So that's a lot. And I enjoy feedback. I enjoy this discussion. I acknowledge that I don't have all the answers. If you run into someone that does, run as fast as you can in the other direction. But we should be able to discuss things. I've enjoyed this, Dan, and I enjoyed your patriotism, your stick-to-itiveness with regard to the recent election. I think we're all better because of it. So thanks for what you do.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you again, and we'll see you guys next time. Taxation is theft.